Bartine Washington, wishing you will have a very good day.
Today is Thursday, November 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Gene Adolfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the UN seeks an explanation from Ethiopia for the arrest of dozens of aid delivery truck drivers and staff.
The 70 truckers who have been detained have been so, we believe, over a few days. It wasn't all just today.
The U.S. and China agreed to accelerate emission reductions to meet the temperature goals of the 2015 Paris Accord.
Now, the two largest economies in the world have agreed to work together to raise climate ambition.
And the U.S. marks Veterans Day. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The United Nations says it is seeking an explanation from Ethiopia for the arrest and detention of some 70 truck drivers contracted to the UN and other aid groups since November 3rd in the city of Semera, the gateway for food convoys struggling to reach the Tigray region. The action is later slap at the world body after the recent expulsion of seven UN staffers and the detention of at least 16 local employees. This, as tension continues over what officials called a, quote, de facto humanitarian blockade, unquote, on the Tigray region. For more, I reached VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir.
The 70 truckers who have been detained have been so, we believe, over a few days. It wasn't all just today, but the UN is being a little vague on details. They're contractors the UN has hired to drive aid convoys into Tigray, and they work for both the United Nations and for some international NGOs. So, of course, the UN is not at all happy about this. First of all, want the aid to get into Tigray. I mean, no aid has gotten into that region in almost 4 weeks now, and the situation is dire. There's more than 5 million people who need assistance, medical help and food primarily. But UN spokesman Staffan Dujarric said on Wednesday that they're continuing to work and to engage with the federal government and Addis to secure the release of all the detained people, both the contractors and the UN staff. And it's important to point out these are national staffers that work for the UN, in other words, Ethiopian nationals.
There is a back and forth between the UN and Ethiopia as to the reasons for this arrest. Some allege that it's been ethnically targeted, and the Ethiopian government is saying it's not.
I think it's important to say that the United Nations has made no accusations towards the federal government of Ethiopia whatsoever, publicly. The UN has said publicly that they're trying to get an explanation for why their staffers have been arrested. A spokesman was asked this week. The UN has made clear that these are Ethiopians first. They're not talking about anybody's ethnicity here. That's not an issue for the United Nations. They're saying these are UN staff and they're Ethiopians. They have made no accusations in public against the federal government. There are reports from the ground that the government has stepped up its detentions of ethnic Tigrayans, but this is not an accusation the United Nations has made.
The UN, even the African Union, talked about a little opening for some kind of solution to this crisis, especially with anti-government forces setting their sights on Addis Ababa. Since then, what has happened?
Well, the United Nations has warned this week that the country could slide into a civil war. They're very concerned about it. They don't want to see this fighting spread towards Addis or anywhere else for that matter. Their envoy, their humanitarian chief, the UN's humanitarian chief, Martin Griffiths, was in the capital and also in Tigray in the last few days. He's back in New York now. Really, the two main goals, and I would put them on an equal parallel, the two main goals of the United Nations are to get aid into the people who need it in every part of Ethiopia. And the second goal is to stop the fighting. And that's where it stands for them. They're not interested in who's right and who's wrong and who's good and who's bad. The point is, everybody needs to come to the table and the weapons need to stop firing.
That's VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking with me from New York. Representatives to the United Nations Security Council say time is running out on finding a political solution to the Tigray conflict before Ethiopia descends into all-out civil war. The warning comes as people in the Tigray region suffer food and fuel shortages due to a government blockade of humanitarian aid. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
In the capital of Ethiopia's northern Tigray region, Mekele, residents say all the fuel stations are closed, food supplies are running out, and food prices are now too high for most people to afford. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has declared a state of emergency as Tigray fighters are advancing south towards Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, taking control of two cities. State Department spokesperson Ned Price was asked Tuesday about reports that several United Nations staff members have been detained by the Ethiopian government. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
If confirmed, we would similarly condemn arrests of UN staff members based on ethnicity. We understand from reports, as you alluded to, that those arrested are Tigrayan. Ethiopian government security force harassment and detention on the basis of ethnicity is completely unacceptable. We equally condemn revenge attacks by militants associated with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, and we call on all parties to cease such activities and respect human rights and the rule of law.
Price said that U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman remains in Addis Ababa, and he said the U.S. fully supports efforts by Olusegun Obasanjo, the African Union's high representative for the Horn of Africa. Obasanjo told the UN Security Council Monday that there is a chance for a political solution, but the window is closing fast. Olusegun Obasanjo is the African Union's high representative for the Horn of Africa. He spoke to a UN Security Council meeting.
All these leaders here in Addis Ababa and in the North agree individually that the difference between them are political and require political solution through dialogue. This, therefore, constitutes a window of opportunity.
On Monday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Ethiopia was one of the issues he discussed with Egypt's foreign minister. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The crisis in Ethiopia also puts the stability of the Horn of Africa at risk. We continue to engage with all parties to the conflict and with partners in the region to encourage peace negotiations without preconditions in pursuit of a ceasefire.
On Sunday, Pope Francis prayed that the peaceful path of dialogue may prevail in Ethiopia. Pope Francis.
I follow with concern the news coming from the Horn of Africa, in particular from Ethiopia, affected by a conflict that has been going on for more than a year and has caused numerous victims and a serious humanitarian crisis.
Price said Addis Ababa is calm at present and again called on Americans who wish to leave Ethiopia to take commercial flights out, saying the State Department will also provide repatriation loans where needed. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The world's top two carbon polluters, China and the United States, have pledged to increase cooperation on climate action in a joint declaration at UN climate talks in Glasgow. In separate news conferences Wednesday, Chinese climate envoy Xi Jinping and U.S. counterpart John Kerry that the two countries would work together to accelerate the emissions reductions required to meet the temperature goals of the 2015 Paris Agreement on climate change. China agreed for the first time to crack down on methane leaks, following the lead of the Biden administration's effort to curb the potent greenhouse gas. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called the move, quote, an important step in the right direction. U.S. climate envoy John Kerry.
Now, the two largest economies in the world have agreed to work together to raise climate ambition in this decisive decade. So tonight, I am pleased to announce, on behalf of President Biden and Secretary Blinken, that we have agreed to a basic framework for this cooperation going forward. Together, we set out our support for a successful COP26, including certain elements that will promote ambition. But let me be clear, this declaration is a step that we can build on in order to help close the gap. You know the expression that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Well, every step matters right now, and we have a long journey ahead of us. So we have to mitigate faster.
We have to cut methane emissions faster. We have to continue to raise ambition. And most of all, we have to take action in order to keep 1.5 degrees centigrade alive. The statement lays out important steps on CO2 emissions as well, including the need to accelerate using best efforts by all of us to phase down unabated coal in this decade as fast as is achievable. The United States and China have no shortage of differences, but on climate, cooperation is the only way to get this job done. This is not a discretionary thing, frankly. This is science. It's math and physics that dictate the road that we have to travel. We believe that China may well have peaked, and we presented that discussion. And the graph shows a sort of plateau, if you will. It may go up a little bit. It's hard to tell. China accepted that they will make best efforts to accelerate the work of phasing down. And I hope in the course of our work that it will become evident that that could be done much sooner.
That's U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry. Today is Veterans Day, a federal holiday observed annually on November 11th in the U.S. in honor of military veterans. Flags of Valor is a company that makes wooden American flags and provides employment for U.S. combat veterans. The company also raises money to support veteran assistance organizations. VOA's Deborah Block has the story.
Eric Wilson is cutting wood to be used for creating handcrafted wooden American flags at Flags of Valor in Winchester, Virginia. After serving in combat with the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan, he says the American flag means a great deal to him.
Here in the U.S., we have the freedom to express whatever religion we want to practice, have freedom of speech, everything else. You have the freedom to express who you want to be. And that's how I see the American flag.
The craftsmen are veterans, including Jacob Young.
I fought for this flag.
Flags of Valor grew from a home project to a manufacturing company in 2015 that sells about 30,000 wooden flags of different sizes each year. Each one is a proud work of art by the veteran who puts their signature on it. Co-founder Brian Stortz, a former Army paratrooper and Air Force Special Operations pilot, began crafting the flags at home as he recuperated from an injury during a deployment in Afghanistan.
What I found was it was very therapeutic, you know, taking raw materials and painting and sanding and turning it into something beautiful, especially, you know, the symbol of our country, which is the American flag.
Later, along with Joe Seamus, another Air Force pilot, Flags of Valor was born.
I think what's made us successful was our devotion from the very beginning to being made in America, to employing veterans, and to giving back.
He says Flags of Valor was founded on philanthropy first, and then profit. So far, the company has raised $1.5 million for veteran and first responder charities.
We do support charities that treat post-traumatic stress. We do support charities that support the families of the fallen. That's very important to us because oftentimes they're not getting all the support that they need.
Besides the typical red, white, and blue flag, there is also a black and white version.
That's the subdued flag. That's the black and white version that we sell that highlights those people that wore that flag in combat.
Stortz appreciates the patriotism and sacrifice of the veterans, who he says make great employees.
I think the unique thing about having combat veterans is that, you know, Joe and I are also combat veterans, so we understand how everyone thinks.
Wilson appreciates the camaraderie that makes him feel at home.
You have that fraternity feeling in the military. This is, you know, that brotherhood feeling.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Winchester, Virginia.
Technological advances in prosthetics have vastly improved the lives of many U.S. veterans and service members over the past 20 years. VOA Julie Tabor has more.
The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has seen more than 250,000 veterans who have had at least one arm or one leg amputated since 2000, most as a result of diseases such as diabetes.
Ready and go.
Thanks to recent technological advances, prosthetic hands and feet now have more function and mobility. Such innovation has helped not only veterans, but also civilians. And the research is constantly evolving. One new procedure for attaching an artificial limb to the body is called osseointegration. A piece of metal is implanted into the bone of the limb's stump, which then attaches directly to a prosthesis. It's challenging because of the risk of infection and fracture.
That's taking a lot of development to make sure that it's good enough to serve our veterans and service members.
Movable fingers and wrists that can rotate are also among the advancements.
Prosthetic hands used to just be either a hook or they could just open and close, and they have one degree of freedom, one thing they can control.
But in 2017, two veterans, Artie McCauley and Fred Downs, who both lost arms while serving in the U.S. Army, were fitted with an advanced prosthetic device called the Luke arm, which closely mimics the natural movement of the shoulder, arm, and hand.
I'm getting to do a lot of other things that I wanted to do earlier, but I never thought I could.
And advances in 3D printing also show promise for customized limb replacement.
Women veterans can have a foot in a high heel that they can detach their ankle from and put it in a flat shoe or not a shoe, and they would have multiple feet that are 3D printed to fit to match their other foot.
Still in development is using existing nerves to help amputees' prostheses respond to thought commands, activating muscles and controlling the prosthetic limb. Schulz says that technology continues to evolve in almost all aspects of prosthetic devices.
As good as prosthetics are now, I think we're at the cusp of them getting a lot better in the next few years.
It's an ambitious vision that could improve the lives of many. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Children in America between the ages of 5 and 11 can now get their COVID vaccinations. A lower dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine has been approved for the youngest age group yet. VOA's Bagum Donmezer-Sores has more from a vaccination center in Fairfax, Virginia.
Children in America can now get their first COVID-19 vaccines at centers like this one in Fairfax, Virginia. Earlier this month, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control approved a recommendation that children between 5 and 11 years old receive a pediatric dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Now, the first of some 28 million eligible children in America are taking their first dose.
It doesn't even hurt. I thought it was over when, like, 5 minutes after. I felt a little bit of it, but it didn't hurt.
Pfizer-BioNTech says the vaccine is about 91% effective in this age group. Children aged 5 to 11 receive one-third of the dose provided to adults and other children over the age of 12. The dose amount is said to be powerful enough to trigger a strong immunological response while being low enough to avoid unwanted side effects. But some parents still aren't sure about following the recommendation. According to a 10-day study by the Kaiser Family Foundation in October, nearly one-third of parents with children between 5 and 11 said they plan to wait and see before having their children vaccinated.
I guess I would say do your research. I think it's safer to get the vaccine than not to, personally, but that's me. I don't want my kids getting COVID, so I feel good that we're on our way to being fully vaccinated.
Nearly 84% of Fairfax County residents have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. There is currently no data available for children between 5 to 11 years old. Begum Donmezarsos, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
Like many nations hit by COVID-19, South Africa has seen rising unemployment and hunger since the onset of the pandemic. For VOA, Linda Giftash in Johannesburg reports, one school, the Green Business College, is tackling these issues with innovative ways, giving people the skills to do not only grow their own produce, but also make money to help their families and build their careers.
At a community center east of Johannesburg, more than 24 students are learning skills that would have been common among their grandparents' generation. The Green Business College is teaching them the basics of organic gardening and food preservation by making jams and sauces. For some, it is expanding on hobbies they discovered while in pandemic lockdown. It is also feeding their entrepreneurial aspirations. Onkopotse Sileka founded the company Uncle OG's Jams.
It's a lost art completely. Most of my peers around my age, they'd rather buy than make. I want to probably get to a point where that I can make a sustainable living from preserving marula fruit.
Making an empire of his late grandmother's jam recipe would be a major career change for the 32-year-old, who currently works for a sporting apparel retailer. Other students are hoping the skills will simply get them into the workforce. More than 30% of South Africans are jobless. College CEO Machipiso Makabane believes the school's courses, which include beekeeping, can inspire people to create their own employment opportunities while addressing issues that come with poverty.
They say, give a man a fish, you have fed him for the day. Teach him how to fish, you have fed him for a lifetime. It's all about power. Take back your power and use it where, invest it in your soil is going to benefit you so that people can come and buy from you and buy health.
South Africa suffers from what experts call a double burden of malnutrition, experiencing extremes of both hunger and obesity. Small farms like the one set up by the college are viewed as part of the solution to providing healthy food to communities. Lisa Corsten is a plant pathology professor at the University of Pretoria.
We believe in shifting people, their whole diet to consuming more fresh produce, to produce more food within their communities. And then obviously a look at food gardens. That to us will be a very important critical element of South Africa's mindset. Produce your own food as well, and not only rely on the food system.
More than 120 students have studied at the main college in downtown Johannesburg in the past year, while many more have participated in workshops around South Africa. Graduates have used their creativity to expand beyond selling vegetables and jams. Tsipitso Moloi's line of hot sauces include a pineapple-infused variety and a ghost pepper sauce with an extreme kick.
It starts as a hobby, and then how do you then graduate that hobby into a business that you can live out of? But I wouldn't have been able to have had the knowledge around preservation that I got from the school. I wouldn't have had the momentum to keep it going, because that mentorship and coaching keeps you on the alert.
And in less than 4 months since launching, she's had two butcher shops request her products for their shelves. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In other news, Fumio Kishida, who was re-elected as Japan's prime minister after his governing party scored a major victory in key parliamentary elections, says the coronavirus remains the country's most urgent issue and pledged to take steps to mend the pandemic's battered economy. Kishida formed his second cabinet by keeping all but one of the ministers he appointed when he took office October 4th. Kishida says he will introduce new measures to prepare for any surge in virus cases, including a significant increase in hospital capacity to avoid late summer near collapse of healthcare systems. He also stressed the importance of a stronger military amid concerns about China's growing power and influence and North Korea's missiles and nuclear threats. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Okwu in Washington. Lebanon is experiencing a crisis in its relations with Saudi Arabia and its Gulf Arab supporters, who trade and financial aid are desperately needed. Criticism by Lebanese cabinet minister over Saudi military involvement in Yemen is at the heart of a diplomatic dispute that is playing into a regional competition for supremacy between Saudi Arabia and Iran-backed Hezbollah. For VOA, Dave Gavlak reports from Amman.
Saudi Arabia expelled the Lebanese ambassador, recalled its envoy to Beirut, and banned imports from Lebanon after comments were broadcast by Lebanon's information minister, George Kordahi. Just before Kordahi became a cabinet member in September, he defended Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels, who received training from Hezbollah. He said Yemen was subjected to what he described as foreign aggression and apparent reference to Saudi Arabia. Gulf allies have responded by recalling their ambassadors from Lebanon and expelling Beirut's envoys. The Arab League has expressed concern over the rapid deterioration of relations. Kordahi is a member of a small Christian party allied with Shiite Hezbollah. Knowing his government is fragile, Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Makati urged Kordahi to put his patriotic sense above all else to defuse the crisis. Meanwhile, influential Catholic Maronite Patriarch Bashara Boutros Al-Rahi and others view Kordahi's comments and refusal to resign as damaging Lebanon's national interests. Kordahi says the remarks were made before taking up his government position. Political analyst Dania Kholia Khatib with the Assam Faris Institute at the American University of Beirut told VOA that the Gulf states have had enough of Hezbollah's stranglehold on Lebanon.
Mikati was hoping so much that the French would be able to, like, to twist the Gulf arm and get money from them. It's not about Kordahi only. It's about dealing with this government that is controlled by Hezbollah. Hezbollah won't let Kordahi resign unless they get something. If Kordahi just resigns, then they will look weak.
Analysts say Mikati faces an uphill task trying to reset relations with Gulf countries. Trade and financial aid from the Gulf once tallied in the billions of dollars. Lebanon cannot expect the same from Iran. A shipment of Lebanese pomegranates bound for Saudi Arabia in spring, stuffed with more than 5 million amphetamine-type pills known as Captagon, produced in the Hezbollah-run Bekaa Valley, put a stop to that lucrative trade, with Saudi Arabia banning all Lebanese fruit and vegetables. Veteran Lebanese Druze politician Walid Jumblah has warned that Iran-backed groups stood to gain from Saudi Arabia's pulling away from Lebanon, which is suffering from severe economic and political crises. Abandoning Lebanon will make Hezbollah stronger, he recently told Dubai's The National. Observers say that Tehran's regional proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon and the Houthis in Yemen, are also jeopardizing a possible thaw in relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have spotted an accident. It's a brown dwarf located about 50 light years away. A brown dwarf was supposed to be a star, but was unable to gain enough mass to sustain the needed hydrogen fusion at its core to become a full-fledged star. The astronomers gave it its nickname because it was detected by accident and that it's not like any of the other brown dwarfs observed so far. A study published in the astrophysical journal Letters suggests the accident might be 10 billion to 13 billion years old, which is about double the average age of other known brown dwarfs. If it is that old, the astronomers say the accident could have formed early in our galaxy's history and have a different chemical makeup. If so, the scientists propose that there are probably many more of these ancient brown dwarfs nearby in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
International edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu from Washington, wishing you a great day.
is the voice of America. Washington, bye-bye.